Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the National Healthcare Program right after this. Well, welcome to Tax Freedom Day. That occurs about May 12th every year. That means that you work all of January, February, March, April, and a third of May to pay your income taxes for the year. And that's not all. Now you can work the rest of May and all of June to pay the rest of your withholding taxes. Now, you know, this income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal enterprises, and the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank. This income tax and Social Security plan also violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Scripture, and that includes our English common law. Now, 14 million Americans are not enrolled in Social Security, and more are opting out every day. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? If you'd like to know more, why don't you write today for our free General Law CD package? To order that package, just call us direct and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the right page and you can download it directly. Okay, that number again, 417-273-4967. Remember, our tax and status school is also available on compact disc for adult homeschool. Why don't you call right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about the President's National Healthcare Plan, and a fellow by the name of Spiker picked up a line from a blogger named Peter Fleckenstein, so I'm giving you a report here on Peter Fleckenstein's report dealing with the 1,018-page National Socialized Medicine Healthcare Plan of the Obama administration. It's quite a program. I mentioned the second item here on the list. All legislation is good legislation. I hear people all the time telling me about how bad the Federal Reserve Act is, or how bad the draft is, or how bad this, that, or some other law is. I have never seen a bad law. All these laws are good. They're wonderful for somebody. Come on, wake up and smell the coffee. This Obama National Health Care Program has 1,018 pages. It doesn't have 1,018 pages because of what 1,017 pages could cover. The reason there's 1,018 pages is that somebody somewhere wanted that last page put in there because it benefits them in some way. It gives them something. It may be the pharmaceutical industry or the American Medical Association, or it may be General Motors or Chrysler or the Auto Workers Union or somebody, but these pages in here, in this bill, has a purpose. It has a reason. Every one of the 1,018 pages are absolutely necessary and imperative. They won't want to leave a single one out. Every provision in here they want passed. That's why they're proposing it. Now, of course, I took a look at it, and my conclusion was that it's not good for Georgie Gordon. There's probably some nice, neat things in here for me. But on balance, when I took a look at it, I said, well, based upon what it's going to cost, based upon the intrusions that it's going to make in my life, based upon how much more tax I have to pay, and what medical services I'm going to receive, my conclusion is this is bad law for George Gordon. I'm only one guy out of 300 million Americans, and God love all the rest of you people. I don't want to tell you what you ought to do. Hell, I don't know what's good for me half the time. I sure as hell don't know what's good for you. But I thought it would make a good story, and I'm going to give you the report. I'll tell you where you can get this report right in front of your own eyeballs. You can download it right off the internet. Now, I'm sure that if you did a Google search on a blogger by the name of Peter Fleckenstein. Now, his Peter you can probably handle. This Fleckenstein now, get your pen out here. Get your pencil out here and let me give it to you. Fleckenstein. Sounds like he's kind of a Jewish boy to me, Fleckenstein. God love him. Peter Fleckenstein, a blogger and former Marine. Can't be all bad if he was a Marine. From Phoenix, Arizona, he's been going through the Obamacare bill page by page and highlighting the provisions that he found there. Now, he has been attacked. Oh, God, they hate him. They think this guy is probably a terrorist working for Osama bin Laden. And so they're out there just trying to tell you what a dirty, no good, downright lying lout this guy is. That told me right away this guy's got something. When people are attacking some guy, you know he's hitting a raw nerve someplace. See, you know that preacher that you were listening to last week, he didn't have anything intelligent to say. There's nobody said a bad thing about his sermon. And that's because he didn't tell anybody anything. If he'd have told somebody something, he'd have pissed somebody off. But if you're careful and you don't tell anybody anything, you won't offend anybody. And if you don't offend anybody, then you haven't told anybody anything. This guy here, he's making everybody mad. So right away that told me he must have something worth listening to. Now, it was picked up by Spiker. So if you want this report, you go to Spiker, S-P-I-K-E-R, at spiker.biz. It's an easy one, spiker.biz. That's Spiker, at spiker.biz. You're looking for the Obamacare broken down for you. God help us. All right. Now, this Peter Fleckenstein is a blogger. And so I'm sure if you went to Google and started looking up Peter Fleckenstein, for crying out loud, he'd show up there someplace. You can probably get this whole report, maybe a whole lot more than this, right from his website. And, of course, in desperation, if you can't find it anyplace else, you call here at the law school, and then we'll do something for you. We'll fax you a copy, or we'll send you one on your email or something. We'll figure out something. But I'd just assume you didn't call me because I really don't want to get involved in it. But I just wanted to pass it on to you. Now, this guy has 118 reasons why this is bad law. Well, you know, it's bad law for you probably. Now, President Obama said that this program is not going to raise taxes on the middle class. Not one person in the middle class making under $250,000 a year is gonna have his taxes raised. God love him. The president's thinking about you. But again, I told you last program when we talked about euthanasia, the president lied about that, and the president's lying to you about these taxes. Now, you know, don't get mad at me now, Mr. President, but you know, we have to presume that you know what's in your own bill. I mean, you're out here selling this. And if you're out here selling this, last time I pointed out this 8% tax. Now, this 8% tax has to be paid by somebody. So I want to show you how this tax thing is going to affect you. Now, if you're rich like Bill Gates, now Bill Gates, the president, says, we're going to sock it to you, Bill. Warren Buffett, by God, Rupert Murdoch, oh, move over, sucker. Boy, we're going to stick it to you. Reminds me of Henry Ford back in 1930, you know. Franklin D. Roosevelt said, you know that dirty, low-down, no good. Henry Ford made $30 million in 1930. And you're out selling apples on the sidewalks. Boy, that got people mad. I don't know if Henry Ford made too much money in 1930 when he made $30 million. I don't know if that's too much or not enough. I don't know what Mr. Ford needed to pay his bills, but I was satisfied with what I earned. And I'm satisfied with what I earn, and I'm not seeking to stick it to Bill Gates, Rupert Murdoch, or anybody else. I don't want anybody to pay for my health care. If I want to buy a Lamborghini, I think I ought to pay for it. If I want to buy a Rolls Royce, I think I ought to pay for it. I don't think the taxpayers of America owe me a Lamborghini or a Rolls Royce. And I don't think you people out in America owe little Georgie Gordon health care insurance. So I just assume you keep your money and go spend it on whatever the hell you want. Leave me out of the game. Let me go pay for my own. And I think that Bill Gates over there, you know, I'm not opposed to Bill at all. And I don't want a tax bill for my benefit. Maybe that's just me. Now, most people, they'd like to do that. Yeah, stick it to Gates and give me the proceeds. That sounds kind of like theft to me, using the police power of the state to reapportion other people's wealth. And that sounds like theft. Thou shalt not steal is the guiding rule, and I thought I'd stick with that. Now, according to the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property, that's a good plan. But the first plank to the Communist Manifesto runs diametrically the opposite to the Eighth Commandment given to us by our Creator. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, last time I left off here on page 149, where it says, any employer with a payroll of 400,000 or more who does not offer the public auction pays an 8% tax on payroll. On page 150, any employer with a payroll of 250 to 400,000 or more who does not offer the public option pays a 2 to 6% tax on payroll. And on page 167, any individual who doesn't have acceptable health care according to the government will be taxed 2.5% of income. Now, right away, when the president says, well, I'm not going to raise the taxes on the middle class, that's a lie. President Bush said that he was going to lower your taxes. Do you remember that? President Bush pushed through the Congress several, not just one, but several tax reduction programs. God, that's popular. God love George Bush. He said, I'm going to lower your taxes. And I'm going to pass these tax reform packages. George Bush raised your taxes. The total tax take was higher during the Bush years than it was before. Now, here's the way George Bush did it. He lowered your taxes, which put you into the alternative minimum tax, and then the alternative minimum tax was higher than the tax reduction that he gave you. So he gave you a 5% tax reduction, which pushed you into the alternative minimum tax called the AMT, which raised your taxes 8 or 10%, and so the net effect of it was you had to pay more money. It was a good plan for Bill Gates and Warren Buffett because their taxes actually went down. Warren Buffett made this confession. He said, look, as a percentage of my income, I pay less than my receptionist in the front office. As a percent of my income. Now, see, the heavy progressive income tax is directly aimed at leveling the playing field. That's why you have a heavy progressive income tax. The more money you make, the more money you have to pay. It doesn't work that way in practice. It works that way in theory. That's what they're out selling you. So President Obama is out here selling you, saying that this is not going to raise your taxes. That's not true. It's going to raise your taxes by 8% if you have a payroll of 400,000. It's going to raise your taxes if you have a payroll of 250 to 400,000. And it's going to raise your taxes if you're self-employed. And it doesn't make any difference now whether you're making $250,000. No, just picture this. Let's suppose I'm a little small businessman. And I have four or five guys working for me. And I have a total payroll of $250,000 a year. I got to pay some payroll tax. Now, somebody's going to say, yeah, but your employees don't have to pay it. Well, hell, I ain't making $250,000 a year. I'm middle class. I'm the owner of the business. My taxes are going to go up by 2.5%, 6%, or 8%. Ain't I one of those to be counted? Don't those of us that create and make the jobs, the shopkeepers and the store owners, don't we get counted in that? Huh? Now, there's another factor for you people to remember. I'm going to take you through. Let's go take a look at tax 101. Okay? Business doesn't pay tax. I just want to let you know, coming right out of the chute, McDonald's doesn't pay any tax. They never have, they don't now, and they're not going to. Just you employees and you customers pay tax. So let me show you how this works. It ain't over on April the 15th. If you stop, for example, for a $10 pizza, go into Pizza Hut, and let's buy a $10 pizza on Thursday night to celebrating being done with the IRS for another year. Well, the tax man is going to be right there to grab a slice or two of your pizza. Because on top of paying the sales tax, you'll also be picking up a major chunk of what the government charges the pizza shop owner for the local property taxes, the unemployment insurance taxes, the federal payroll taxes, the federal and state and local income taxes, and workers' compensation taxes. Altogether, according to a study by the Americans for Tax Reform, that comes to $3.80 on a $10 pizza for the omnipresent tax man. Okay, let's think about this for a second. Where does the money come from when you go into Pizza Hut? Just think about this. Now, you walk into Pizza Hut, and there's a girl there. She takes your order. There's a couple other guys behind the counter. Then there's a guy back in the kitchen cooking, maybe two. Maybe you've got a busboy running around out there clearing the tables off. Well, whoever it is that owns that Pizza Hut franchise is selling a $10 pizza. And he has to pay payroll taxes on each and every one of those employees. And now the President of the United States comes along and he says, hey, I'm gonna give all of these employees working here at Pizza Hut national health care insurance. We're going to spend the money. So the owner of the Pizza Hut, which is a corporation under Hale versus Hinkle, is locked in. He's gonna shut his mouth, and he's going to pay the 8% tax. Like it or lump it. Now, what is he going to do to collect it? He's going to raise the price of the pizza from $10 to $11. See how simple that is? Or he is going to start cutting back on the amount of cheese or the amount of pepperoni that he puts on the pizza when he sells it to you. So you're either going to get less pizza or you're going to pay more money. Now, boys and girls, isn't that a tax increase? See, if the president raised your taxes, you'd get ticked off at him. But the president isn't going to raise your taxes. He's going to raise the taxes on Pizza Hut. And then Pizza Hut's going to raise the price of the pizza. So when you walk in there, you're going to pay the tax. You're going to pay for the National Health Care Insurance Program for the 7 or 8 Pizza Hut employees. God love all you pizza eaters out there. Why don't you order 2? And pay twice as much. I've always said, if 8% is good, wouldn't 16% be even better? Hey, Nell, why should we stop at 8%, Mr. President? Why don't you make sure that we can fund this thing adequately? Raise Pizza Hut's tax 16%. If 8% is good, I can't believe that 16% wouldn't be twice as gooder, wouldn't it? So, let's make sure we got plenty in the pot here, shall we? Now, if you think you're going to raise the tax on Pizza Hut by 16%, the payroll tax, and not have that pass through in the price of the pizza, you know, you people need to go back to college or something. All right, so the pizza right now today that you're eating over here at Pizza Hut or wherever you're buying it, you know, Papa John's or somebody else, has a $3.80 tax. It's called a hidden tax. Hey, let's go down to 7-Eleven, buy a Bud six-pack. If you pick up a six-pack of Bud Light to go with that pizza, that's another 43 cents for every beer dollar that goes straight to the tax man for excise taxes, income taxes, property taxes, and so on. For something stronger than beer, let's say Jack Daniels, the tax man share is $7.20 on average out of every $10 spent. That's 72%. So you go in, you want to buy a fifth of whiskey, 72% of it is taxed. You go in and you buy a pack, six-pack of beer, 43% of the price of the beer is taxed. So you're paying that tax, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer, middle-class taxpayer, just like Bill Gates. Now, when Bill Gates goes in and he buys a six-pack of beer, he's paying the same 43% tax that you and I are paying. With one little caveat, he's got a lot more money to pay the tax with. So this tax works the hardest on the poorest people in the land. Think about it. If you're making $100,000 a year, you're in the top 5% of income earners. You go in to buy a pizza and have a beer. Now you're making $20,000 a year and you go in to buy a beer and eat a pizza. You make one-fifth as much, but you pay exactly the same amount of tax. The heavy progressive income tax, advertised by the socialists and the communists as the leveler of the playing field, doesn't work for you at all. It works against you. The poorer you are, the higher the percentage of the tax. So you go in and you buy a pizza, you pay the same $3.80, 38% of the price of the pizza. The guy that's making $100,000 a year works 2,000 hours a year. So if he works from 100,000, I'll just divide this out, 100,000 divided by 2,000 hours is $50 an hour. But if you're working and you're making $20,000 a year, so I'll put $20,000 divided by the same $2,000, it's $10 an hour. So you're making $10 an hour, one-fifth as much money, and you pay the full $3.80. The guy that's making $100,000 a year, he pays $3.80. You're paying five times as much as a percent of your income as the guy making $100,000. The rich people get by when they pay these taxes, when they're actually paying taxes, which is this is the case, they only pay a fifth the tax that you pay. How do you like that? Now, that's just where reality is located. Now, if you're flying, let's try this one. Jack Daniels, let's try this. If you're flying the next day, the tax man is up early and waiting at the airport. When you buy an airline ticket, $40 out of every $100 for that airline ticket goes to tax. He's there in the hotel lobby when you land. He snatches $43 out of every $100 of the hotel bill. When you go out to dinner, the tax is $28 out of every $100 of your dinner tab. That ends up with the government rather than with the restaurant, the farmers, the truckers, and everyone else who worked to produce that meal that you're eating in the restaurant. If you're going a little lighter and you're just drinking Pepsi-Cola, the tax is 35% on soda pop. If you want a pack of Marlboros, it's 75% tax. So whatever you're paying for a pack of cigarettes, 75 cents goes to the government. 25 cents goes to everybody else in the production chain. the clerk at the 7-Eleven store, the owner of the 7-Eleven, the tobacco company, the tobacco farmer, the truck driver that delivered them. All of those guys divide up 25 cents among them. The government gets 75%. And here's the kicker. The government does absolutely nothing to produce the cigarettes. The government doesn't do anything to produce the pizza. Nothing. Zero. Government produces nothing and consumes much. But they get a heftier percentage of the profits off of the sale of all of these goods in our economy than do the people that actually produce them, deliver them, cook them, sell them. Now, let's take a look at a couple of more. You go out and you buy some new tires. Now, go into your local Firestone store and buy some new tires. $36 out of every $100 goes to the tax man. When you look at the price of a new car, and Americans for Tax Reform study shows that the total taxes are 45% of the showroom sticker price. Then add some gasoline, and it's taxed 54% of what you pay when you fill up your gas tank is tax. And for 43 different federal, state, and local taxes rather than the oil producer and the retailer. Now, let's stop and think about that. I was in the other day, and the price of gas here where I'm at is $2.30, $2.29.9. So $2.30. Now, let's take a look here. Times 0.54. $1.24 is the tax. Now, when you look on the gas pump, it says here in Missouri that we're paying 43 cents a gallon for gasoline taxes. That's the direct gasoline tax that the state charges, state and federal governments charges, to build roads and highways and so on. But hey, listen, there's the ship that brought the oil over here from Saudi Arabia. There's the oil refinery down in Louisiana where they refined it. There's the barge company that barged the gasoline up to St. Louis. There's the trucking company that trucked the gasoline from St. Louis over here to Isabella. There's the gas station owner that owns it. And there's all of these school districts and all of these locals around here that are taxing the trucking companies, the barge companies, and the refineries. And those people add those costs, just like the pizza parlor, into the price of the goods that they're selling. So when you're paying $2.30 a gallon for gasoline, and you look and you say, gee, 43 cents is tax. No, it isn't. No. It's 54%. And that 54% strikes the poorest people of our country harder than those that are rich. The guy that's making $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year, he's paying the same tax as the guy that's making $20,000, $30,000, or $40,000 a year. So the guy that's making the $20,000, $30,000, or $40,000 a year is paying 2, 3, 4, 5 times the percentage of his income for these taxes. So when your president says he's not raising your taxes with this health care plan over there, the man's lying to you. And he's lying because it isn't a mistake. It isn't a mistake. He knows better. When President Bush said, I'm going to lower your taxes, he lied to you. He knew full well that alternative minimum tax was going to bump you up into a higher tax bracket, and that the ultimate end was going to be you're going to pay more taxes than if we just leave the taxes alone, just where they're at. He knew that. Now, if the president comes out and says, I want to raise your taxes 8%, you people aren't going to like that because, you know, 6 or 7 million of you just lost your jobs in the last couple of years, and you're bummed out. And the rest of us are nervous as a couple of whores sitting in church, and so, you know, we're not anxious to be taxed any higher. So when the president says, I'm not going to raise your taxes, but I'm going to give you this $1 trillion program, and we're going to pay for this on the backs of Bill Gates, Rupert Murdoch, and Warren Buffett, He's lying to you. Pure and simple. Now, Warren Buffett was honest enough to say that he pays less, not less total dollars in taxes. Now, he probably pays $1 million a year in taxes. But he's got a secretary out front, and she's probably making $30,000, $40,000 a year. And he said, as a percentage of my income, I pay less tax than my secretary. And that's the truth. He's not lying. I can testify to that. It's exactly right. When I'm in the business world, I pay less tax as a percentage of income than do my employees. And I'm not paying this tax. I'm adding it into the price of my product and passing it on to my customers, who just happen to be my employees and you and everybody else out there. Now, everything that we consume, this, on the sale of a loaf of bread, 27% of the price of that loaf of bread, more than a quarter, is tax. Your tires are taxed, 36%. Now, at the start of this nation's unique experiment with individual sovereignty and limited government, taxation without representation was called tyranny. It was the watchword of the American Revolution. For our founding fathers, a level of taxation of only a few cents on a dollar, siphoned off to a faraway and arrogant bureaucracy, was enough to ignite a revolution. It was enough to grab the trusty musket off the wall. Well, today, in contrast, if we dare to startle the more panicky among us by buying a good rabbit gun, the government is there at the cash register to check our papers and then take $46 out of every 100. That's 46%. So when you buy a gun, you know, the government talks a lot about gun control and one thing and another. Well, that's poppycock. Every time the government comes up with a program and they say, "Well, we're gonna pass this gun control legislation," it panics everybody and they run out and buy guns. The greatest boon to the arms industry in this country was the election of Barack Obama. And the people of America responded, and they went out and started buying guns and ammunition. Until today, there are shortages. You walk into a store today and tell them you want 3240 ammunition, they look at you with a blank stare and say, "I'll put you on the list." You tell them you want 45, 38, and you got to get put on the list. Listen, the gun grabbers out here, they're not dummies. They're taxing roughly 50 cents out of every dollar in taxes. That's what's on the goods that you're buying out there. So when you go out and buy an automobile, nearly half the price of the automobile goes to the government in tax. That's why they like the automobile industry. Nearly 50 cents out of every dollar goes for, when you buy a gun, goes for tax. The government produces nothing. The government's never produced a gun, never produced a car, never produced a tire, never produced a loaf of bread, and they tax them all. And oftentimes, the tax amounts to more than the profit than the people that actually produced it's making. You can rest assured that the Pizza Hut is not netting 38% profit on a pizza, but the government is. The Jack Daniel's distillery is not netting 72% profit on the sale of their whiskey, but the government does. Now, tuck it away in your heart. This health care program over here is going to cost all of us, and particularly you poor people the most, the middle class next, and the rich people the least. Bill Gates is going to pay less for health care than he's paying today with this health care program. And God love him, I'm sure Bill Gates would like to do that. It's just that I don't want to subsidize Bill, Warren, and Rupert. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, go to the appropriate page, and you can download that free CD package, which is the place to start, by the way. You can download it free of charge. Absolutely no cost to you whatsoever. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements are recommendations that we give. That doesn't mean that the author or the publication that we're endorsing are necessarily going to endorse or recommend us here at the law school. We should all keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about the National Health Care Program of President Obama, the Obama administration. It's about a $1 trillion program. Now, anytime government gives us a new program, let's take a look at the Bush War in Iraq. Remember what they sold that for? $50 billion. They said, we're going to go to war in Iraq. It'll cost $50 billion, and then we'll take it out of the Iraqis' hides. We'll just take it in oil. Won't cost us a dime. Now, we have already spent $3 trillion. $3 trillion. $1 trillion in cash and $2 trillion in contingent liabilities that'll be paid over the next 40, 50 years during the lifespan of the veterans that have to have the medical treatment and the medical care and the pensions and so on in order to pay for that war. So he said it's going to cost $50 billion. It cost about 60 times that. Now, I wouldn't say that the president's medical program here is going to cost us 60 times, but it's going to cost you something more than what he's advertising. These government programs, every time they tell you, every time they give you a number, they underestimate it by about 100 to 500%. In some cases, it's worse than that. If you take a look at Medicare, Medicare is unsustainable. Medicare is coming to an end. I know nobody wants to hear it, but, you know, it's coming to an end. It's simply because it grows geometrically, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. And there comes a point in time when it's unsustainable. Social Security isn't always going to be there. It also is a Ponzi scheme. It's a geometric progression program. Let me give you a little illustration as to how that one worked. Just one illustration out of many here. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the war in Iraq. These things grow geometrically. Now, geometric progression works like this. If you were to If you were to take 1 penny and double that to 2 pennies, that's one event. Then take 2 pennies and double it to 4 pennies. That's 2 events. Take 4 pennies and double it to 8 pennies. That's 3 events. If you do that 32 times, it totals $40 million. That's called geometric progression. If you take a penny and you double it to 2, and then you add a penny, that's 3. Then you add a penny, that's 4. Add a penny, that's 5. That's called arithmetic progression. If Social Security and Medicare were growing arithmetically, there wouldn't be any problem. This national health care thing that the president is promoting over here is a geometric progression program, just like Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid. In the final analysis, it'll cost $1 trillion over this 10 years, and then $2 trillion over the next 10 years, and then $4 trillion over the next 10 years, and so on. And pretty soon it'll go 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, and then you'll be out into the stratosphere so far that it'll collapse. So just looking at it at this juncture of time, I came to a conclusion. I said, well, this is another one of these Bernie Madoff Ponzi schemes. It sounds good, and it works good for the early going, but ultimately it'll collapse. And that's where our economy is. See, where our President Roosevelt said, you know, let's start deficit spending back in 1933, and so we did. The ultimate end of it was the collapse of our economy, which is now what we're experiencing. So it's going to occur, and the economy is going to collapse. And what you're experiencing right now in the stock market is what they call a dead cat bounce. It's unsustainable. The stock market will go down in total 89% from its high. Now, that's the historical norm. So let's take 14,000 and let's go times 0.89. And it's going to lose 12,460 points from its top to its bottom. It hasn't done that yet. Well, it will. Just be patient. So if we were to take 14,000 and take 12,500, well, I didn't get that right. 14,000. Now let me take 12,500 away from that. The stock market will bottom out around 1,500. And so if you're in stocks, you've got a long ride to go down to 1,500. Now, the stock market is a neat place to gamble. I don't deny that. If you're a gambler, that's a good place to gamble. I prefer the crap table because you can get a decision about every 30 seconds. On a slow table once every minute. The stock market takes weeks and months, you know, to give you a decision on your bet. And I'm kind of impatient, so I prefer going to the casino. All right, now we were talking about this guy, this blogger. And the guy's name is Peter Fleckenstein. You can get this report from Spiker at spiker.biz. Or you can go to Peter Fleckenstein, F-L-E-C-K-E-N-S-T-E-I-N. He's a blogger, former Marine from Phoenix, Arizona. And I think you can find him on the Internet. Now, he wrote up this report. Now, I'm giving you these numbers here because this tax thing that is on page, these taxes are on page 149, 150, and page 167 of the Obama tax bill. All right, so taxes are going up. The president lied to you, and he lied to you about this thing. Remember, I reported in the last program this thing called euthanasia. It's on page 425, 427, 429, 430. Now, you know, the president is a salesman. Salesmen are liars, all of them. All salesmen are liars, and that's because they tell their customer what the customer wants to hear. And what the customer wants to hear isn't necessarily the truth. And so we lie to you. That's all. We just sit there and tell you what you want to hear in order to make the sale, and that's what the president's doing. He wants to make a sale, and he's going to tell you whatever you want to hear. Now, on page 170, any non-resident alien is exempt from individual taxes. I reported that to you last time. On page 195, officers and employees of government health care bureaucracy will have access to all American financial and personal records. So whatever financial and personal records that you have on file with any other agency of government are now going to be available to this new bureaucracy. That's why your Fourth Amendment rights are so important. See, this Fourth Amendment provision in your Bill of Rights that protects your person, houses, papers, and effects, when you sign this contract, whether it's your employer that you're working for or you go in and you sign up because somebody asked you to, then you're going to agree to waive your Fourth Amendment rights just like you do when you go on parole or probation. You sign your parole or probation agreement, and then you're surprised when your parole officer says, here, pee in this bottle. Well, you agreed to. And if you don't, they'll revoke your parole or probation and throw you back in jail. So it's all done with your consent. So you want to tuck that one away in your heart. Remember that a common law free man, in theory, can live his life from birth to death and never sign his name a single time. Every time you sign your name, you are impairing your liberty to some degree. So when I have somebody come to me and say, here, sign here, you know, red flags come up immediately, and I say, hey, beep, 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 beep. What do you want me to sign and why? Why do you need my signature? Why don't you just deliver it without me signing? Page 203, the tax imposed under this section shall not be treated as a tax. That's what it really says. There's a clause in there. The tax imposed under this section shall not be treated as a tax. So they're not going to call this a tax. They're going to call it a premium or something, say. It is a tax, and we're going to impose it. In fact, there's other sections that say that we're going to raise this tax by 8%, but they got a clause in there that says, hey, but don't you call this a tax now. Bill will reduce physician services for Medicaid seniors and the poor most affected. Doctors, no matter what specialty you have, you'll all be paid the same. Thanks. So you can be a brain surgeon, or you can be a podiatrist. You're all going to get paid the same. Government sets value of the doctor's time, their professional judgment, etc. Government mandates the controls and controls productivity for private healthcare industries. Government regulates the rental and purchase of power-driven wheelchairs. Cancer patients, welcome to the wonderful world of rationing. Hospitals will be penalized for what the government deems preventable readmissions. Doctors, if you treat a patient during an initial admission that results in a readmission, you will be penalized by the government. Page 317. Doctors, you are now prohibited from owning and investing in healthcare companies. Page 318. Prohibition on hospital expansion. Hospitals cannot expand without government approval. Page 321. Hospital expansion hinges on community input. In other words, it's another payoff for ACORN. Page 335. Government mandates establishment of outcome-based measures. That means rationing. Now, I'm going to put a little mark right here. One of the things that I have read consistently is that national health care insurance produces a shortage of doctors, a shortage of hospital beds, and a rationing system. Now, the president says, oh no, there isn't going to be any rationing. Well, let's take a look at it and think about it for a minute. What is it that keeps you from buying a Porsche? Isn't it the price? I know that's why I don't have a Porsche. They cost too much. Well, in my mind, they cost too much. That's why I don't have a Lexus, Lamborghini, or a Rolls Royce. They cost too much. Now, with the market, the free market system that we use today, There are no shortages of Porsches, Lamborghinis, Lexus, or Rolls Royces. Now, let's change the law. Let's guarantee every American a right to own an automobile and an automobile of his choice. Well, we're going to treat everybody in America equally. Now, would you rather have a Toyota or a Porsche? Would you rather have a Chrysler or a Lexus? Would you rather have a Lamborghini or a Rolls Royce? Or would you rather have a Cadillac or an Oldsmobile? See, so all of a sudden, whatever it is that is the most popular, that's what people are going to ask for. Now, if too many people, if everybody in America who's going out and buy a new car, if they had a choice, price is all the same. All price is now going to be leveled. Well, wouldn't everybody go in and take a Porsche, Lamborghini, Lexus, and a Rolls Royce as opposed to a Yugo, Toyota, or a Chevrolet? So at some point in time, the people that make these Porsches and Lamborghinis wouldn't have enough of them, so you'd have to ration them, wouldn't you? And I just had a guy down here the other day from Canada. I says, well, now, how does your Canadian health care program work? He says, works perfect. I said, you got any complaints? He said, no, none at all. I says, what happens when you have a medical problem? He says, I go to St. Paul, Minnesota. See, up in Canada, 80% of the people who live in Canada live within 200 miles of the United States border. 200 miles. 80% of them. And this guy wasn't any different. He's just 40 miles north of the border in a place called Thunder Bay, Ontario. And I said, well, Joe, what happens when you have a medical emergency? So I go down to St. Paul, Minnesota and have it taken care of. I said, well, what other Canadians do? Well, if you're not in a hurry, you get it free service by going in to the local clinic. But if you have something needs to be taken care of, like cancer, you know, heart attack, you need bypass surgery, you know, anything that requires any real medical attention, you just come down to the state and say, well, how do you pay for it? Pay for it with money. So the Canadians, I don't know how many are doing that, and I'm sure the poor Canadians probably stay there and wait in line. But anybody that's got a couple bucks in their pockets, you know, like I told the guy here, I said, well, we need this hip replacement for my son. It costs $8,000 to do this in India, and you want $30,000 here, $32,000. I said, hey, we're going to jump on an airplane, go to India, and have it done over there. He says, well, I'll do the surgery for $7,000. Cash. I said, okay, doc, $7,000's in the bag, 3 days in the hospital, then you're an outpatient, and $1,400 for the anesthesiologist. You added it all up together, and it was just a little bit more than the airfare and the cost of going to India. So I said, well, that's what the Canadians do. Now, the rest of you people around the world, maybe all you know is socialized medicine. But here in the United States, there are no lines. There's high prices. High prices. If I go to a doctor today, he's probably going to charge me $125 for an office visit. And I go over to my chiropractor, he charges me $40 for an adjustment. Well, I don't need a chiropractic adjustment very often, but I went over and I had a crick in my back. I don't know what happened. I got up, you know, I'm an old fart to start with, and I got up and I got this pain in my side, and I figured, hell, go away. And so, you know, I toughed it out for a couple, 3 weeks, and, you know, I just didn't get any better. And, you know, I'm kind of walking around hurting and grumpy. And so I said, well, I guess I got to go over to old Doc Green and see what the hell he can do for me. So I did. I went over there. Hey, Doc, I got this crick in my back. And so he took me in there, and he, you know, he crunched some bones and straightened me out. And then he said, how's that feel? I said, well, it hurt like hell when it straightened out, but, you know, it'll probably get better. And it did, you know, for another week or so. You know, I could feel a little bit of pain here, not 2 minutes. I went back a second time. He says, "That's still hurting." I said, "No, but why don't you crunch my bones again and let's see if that'll make sure it doesn't happen again." He did. Charged me another $40. How long does it take him to do that adjustment? Oh, hell, if he takes more than 60 seconds, he's having a slow day. So he's charging me about $40 a minute. How much is that an hour? 60 times $40, that's $2,400 an hour. Now, he can't do that 60 minutes out of every hour. He's got four rooms. He sticks four people in there. He goes into one room and he has you stripped down and then he does an adjustment and then he leaves you alone. You can get dressed. He goes to the next room and so on. But I know he can do four an hour. I mean, you know, standing on his head in the corner. And I think he can do more by, you know, 8 or 10 or something like that. You know, so, you know, you take $40 an hour times 10 an hour, you know. That's $400 an hour. I don't know how long he works. He's there from 11 to 5:30, so that's 6.5 hours. So let's just go times 6, you know, to be conservative. $2,400 a day. Old Doc Green, you make $2,400 a day. I don't know if that's too much money. I don't make $2,400 a day, but Doc does, you know, on a good day. Now, you doctors out there, see, I don't know how much money you guys make, and I don't know if it's too much money, but I paid Doc Green $80 to fix my back, and I think that $80 was well spent. And I don't know how much the guy makes, and I don't know if it's too much, and I don't know if he probably ought to be brought down to earth by the National Healthcare Program. I don't know what that's going to do to the doc's earning capacity, but I suspect that it's not going to be good. And from what I've read, you know, it's not been good in England, Canada, or Australia where you people have tried it, at least not for the doctors. Now, it might be good for Joe Sixpack out here. I wouldn't say it wasn't. But tuck it away in your hearts here, Doc. I don't think it's going to do a lot for you. And from the people that I've talked to and the students that I've had come through my class, they say up in Canada, you know, if you got something you need done, you go down to the States to have it done. You pay cash for it. Now, you're paying your taxes in Canada, and you're not even using the service because it's rationed, and you got to stand in line for so long, which makes all the sense in the world. When things are free, you know, let's just test it. You know, go to McDonald's, and they're giving away free hamburgers to be paid for at taxpayer expense. Hell, I think you'd have lines. I think you'd have lines. Now, they work hard, you know, to keep the lines short and to keep you serviced, and I don't deny it, but when things are free, people buy more of them. And when things cost a lot, then they buy fewer of them. And that's why the people in a free market have plenty of Rolls Royces, because the price is so high that not everybody can afford them. And most of us have to drive Chevrolets and Fords. It's the way that game is played. So I'll put a mark right here in the margin. And we'll take it up right here next time when we come back here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, talking about this thing of the President's National Health Care Initiative. Meanwhile, back on the farm, let me give you a reminder that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.